Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Midweek Takeaway, where we unpack the most intriguing investment opportunities and market trends. Today we're joined by Colin Bird, Chairman of African Pioneer, Martin Churchhouse, Group Senior Technical Manager, and Charles Archer, seasoned journalist and investor. In this episode, we'll delve into African Pioneer, a company with significant stakes in the rapidly evolving copper industry. African Pioneer, listed under London AFP, has been navigating the complexities of small-cap investments with a sharp focus on copper, a metal facing a substantial future supply gap as global demand soars. Despite its IPO launch price dip from 3.5p in mid-2021 to under 2p, the company remains a formidable player in the copper sectors of Botswana, Namibia and Zambia. We'll explore the strategic moves that set African Pioneer apart in the junior resource market and discuss the broader implications of copper's global supply challenges, highlighted by industry giants like S&P Global and Goldman Sachs. So welcome, gents.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Absolutely. So I'll hand the floor over to you, Charles, now, and you can now have a good chat with Colin and Martin.
Wonderful. Let's speed around through this. Hi, Colin. Hi, Martin. How's your week been so far?
Been very busy. Nothing changes. It sets down. And as Bill says, that the opportunities presented to the junior sector are immense in the junior sector. It was the most challenging I've ever had in my entire career. So we're into a massive mismatch. But, so optimistic, driven by pure fundamentals, that it sets down. We want to be ready when it all happens, and it will.
It will. I mean, I remember writing articles last year, the year before, about, you know, the copper boom that is currently about to happen. Everybody was saying in the industry, eventually, this copper supply gap is going to open up. And now you have everybody from the Bank of America to Goldman Sachs to Citi saying, yes, the time has come. 2024 is the year that copper is going to shine through. So, you know, maybe before we get into like the African Pioneers project and what everything is up to, we should talk a little bit about copper and like the opportunity in Africa in general. So, Colin, copper, what's going to happen in the next couple of years?
Well, I think it's fairly well known in London and around in the UK there, and anybody who invests in our own market, that I've been a copper bull for some time now. And I started putting the portfolio together way back in 2016-17 on the belief that really wasn't on the back of electric cars. Electric cars are one thing, take it or leave it. And, you know, the jury, of course, has got to take it, whether they like it or not. Talking about the rate of change and the speed at which they emerge. But, you know, the emerging nations, there's so many nations now want that, you know, some of these nations have got the past the first fridge. They want to deep freeze in the garage. They want two cars in the garage. They all want a cell phone. We've got a rapidly emerging world where the demand for copper is absolutely evident. And quite frankly, the electric car story is just and the antibacterial, anything you want to look at, copper seems to be wanted, you know, copper seems to be part of it. So basically, the copper space, quite frankly, is well recognized. But people are working extremely hard at the moment, very to suppress it. You know, it's no secret that China is trying to tell us every 5 minutes, we're slowing down, we're building apartments, we can't sell them. And yet at the same time, the refinery charges in Europe, you know, are at an all-time low. Look at the LME stocks. Look at the price, about 9.95 now and growing. So we're into it. And I'm not part of that army what wants to talk about $15,000 a ton. I really don't care. Anybody who can $10,000 a ton in a project now really going to make an awful lot of money, provided, you know, the underlying fundamental technical stack up. Having said that, you know, it costs more to build a plant than it did pre-COVID. It costs a lot more to build a plant. So it's not one-way traffic. But I think the big thing what's happening, and it's quite alarming, really, quite worried, because wars have been fought over oil, and I would like to think that wars are going to be fought over copper. But the supply side is looking, the demand side we've addressed now. Yeah. And you can argue with that, and there's some for, some against, but you cannot argue against the supply side. The fund, absolutely grim. Latin America seems to be anti-copper.
It does. Even the copper it does have, Colin, now, the grades are falling. They're not finding anything new, really. It's getting more and more expensive to get it out of the ground in Latin America. And you look at Africa, specifically Zambia and Botswana, and it seems to be that you've got these massive deposits, top-tier quality, should be relatively easy to get it out, and maybe just the infrastructure is the issue.
Absolutely. Yeah, they present their own challenges. But, you know, even BHP get scared of digging 600 meters in Chile to get to 4% copper.
Yeah.
But a $700 million pre-strip, you know, that takes a lot of courage, and possibly there's another word for courage. Then we look at Panama. Poor old Dallas Quantum spent up $10.3 billion.
Only doing nothing.
Changing the strip, and they're not welcome anymore.
Yeah.
So these are big chunks of supply taken out of the system. I'm quite surprised, really. You know, I've been in this mining business for years, you know, and I'm quite surprised, you know, you had that dip sometime last year down to about 7-8. And these major mining companies took the projects off the table and put them back in the drawer. Be so reactive when you're planning 50 years mines. You've got to look at trends. And I think my summary is that, like it or not, this basically, in actual fact, if you look at the cost structure, what it costs to bring a new mine on, both exploration and pre-production. Remember, you know, when I first started out in this business, 5% of your pre-production costs were environmental and that sort of thing. Now 30%.
Yeah.
That's fairly serious. But what was an 18-month process is now a 4 or 5-year process in countries in Latin America.
Yeah,
so there's enormous pressure on that supply side, whilst the demand side cannot be held back for obvious reasons. So I've taken a long time to answer your question, but I'm so excited about the prospects for copper, long and medium term.
Well, I'll tell you what, I think I'd much rather have a long answer than a short or one or two word one, which you get sometimes. We were talking about Latin America there. I mean, if you look at Zambia, you know, external investment kind of collapsed a few years ago, but they've changed the tax regime. They've changed their tune. They want to get a lot of copper out of the ground. Corporation tax, flat rate at 30%. The mineral royalty, you can deduct it from it. There's so many incentives to get into the space because they want you there. They want you to get the copper out of the ground. And I guess all this goes to say, when I was initially kind of looking around, because I thought copper would do really well, I think the assets in Africa are going to do really well. What companies are both strategically located across Zambia and Botswana and also have copper? African Pioneer was one of the names that popped up. So obviously in Botswana, you've got the Kalahari Copper Belt. In Namibia, you've got the Mauritius Copper Belt. And in Zambia, you've got the Central African Copper Belt, and just assets seem to be everywhere. What would you say is your most promising asset on the books at the moment? Maybe Martin to this one as a geologist.
With my geological hat on, it's the projects are all at sort of different stages of their development.
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, if you're looking to catch the imagination of potential shareholders, then I would certainly say that the Western Foreland and the Thrust and Fault Belt up in northwest Zambia is most exciting. Obviously, because, you know, potentially there's Kamoa-style mineralization and grades in the region, and we're starting to find the right sort of diagnostics in terms of the geological features that we want that will create that type of mineralization. We're finding those now.
Mm.
That's very exciting. So, yeah, purely from a geological
perspective
viewpoint, I would say northwest Zambia. In terms of something that's more advanced, you're probably looking in Namibia at the Ngombo project, which has got 30 million tons. And as you know, we have other group projects in Namibia, and there's always an opportunity for some sort of synergy way further down the line. As far as Botswana goes, you know, there's been a huge amount of activity there in the last few years, and it doesn't seem to be slowing down. Our view with Botswana is that, you know, we've got, again, on the sort of group level, we've got projects that are strategically very well located. And, you know, the morphology and the grades, interesting and can be a little bit challenging potentially, but view has always been and continues to be that we need to remain on good terms with our neighbours. You know, there will be, everybody's going to need
compromise.
And looking to work with those nearby in Botswana. So I think in terms of the copper assets, you're effectively covering pretty much the spectrum in terms of near-term production, longer-term, huge potential, and then, you know, something in the middle where there's an opportunity to work with other explorers and producers.
A consistent news flow, one would hope, over time. I mean, Colin, if you look at Ngombo, a base in Namibia, I mean, the most recent discussion I've had is that the company is in advanced discussions with multiple partners for project-level funding. And what I find interesting about this is that just the mineral resource estimate is very good, but it looks like you've got a potential for just a quick, you know, a relatively quick starter mine just to get up and running with open pit methods. How close are you, would you say, to a deal? Or is this something that's going to take a little bit longer?
Well, you know, we've also got an interest in another company down at Open Gorup, which is in the Masters Copper Belt. But going back to Ongombo, it's quite a nice proposition. It's dipping quite shallowly. The work that's done before was done by majors who, quite frankly, were looking for a totally different subject. We found a small mine and we found potential to actually grow that mine adjacent and within the actual mining boundaries that we've established. And the attention, quite frankly, just before this Zoom call came in unsolicited, don't let's call it an approach, call it a request to visit our data room to see all about the projects in Namibia. So we had a conversation 10 minutes ago. And that conversation preempts these calls. The level of interest is enormous now. And quite frankly, if we were relying on stock markets, junior stock markets, to fund us on equity, if we were relying on standard project finance like the old days of banks,
you'd have no chance, would you? Really?
It would be impossible. But the number of family offices now who are recognizing that make the money from property normally, so they understand. You understand the risk fundamentals of the mining business. You know, property, you acquire a plot, you get your plans, you've got to raise your money to build your cinema, your mall, whatever, you're going to do your hotel. And of course, that's slowed down in parts of the world. And that money is beginning to flow into copper. The smart money now is recognizing that base metal, not just copper, that base metals is the place to be. So it's not just sort of trying to make out that there's a lot of interest in our project. There's a lot of real interest in our project. The ones who are reticent, if you like, are the ones who have just got to start acting soon. Because I've seen so many times in my career, the big mining companies, they're saying, oh, that's too small for us, that's too small for us. But I remember about 2 years ago, the bar was about 3 million tons of copper, contained copper for a good project. They now started looking at 1 million tons for a good project. I bet you that bar drops to 500,000 tons because they've got to maintain their production profile. So the interest is coming from family houses, offices, that sort of thing. And the banks obviously are not interested and probably never will be. But my suspicion is that the M&A activity in and around juniors who have got good projects close to being brought into production with upside potential, I think that's very, very important. Now, little single projects of 6,000 tons will still remain in the domain of junior mining companies. But if they're adjacent to a whopping great exploration target, then that's number one for the majors. The Chinese majors are around, of course, but not the conventional ones. You know, you don't see much of the Rios, the BHPs. But they're just sharpening the pencils and getting ready for the off.
Yeah, well, they are, aren't they? I mean, it's super interesting. I mean, it obviously not just you. There's plenty of operators in Zambia, in Namibia, in Botswana, looking for gold, drilling for gold. And what I've noticed is that everybody's trying to get licenses now. Previously, a few years ago, getting hold of them was not particularly difficult. Now there seems to be a race to get the best ones, and you lock them up. So congratulations to you, Colin. I mean, it seems to me that the past couple of years has not been particularly friendly to the junior resource sector. But having done that legwork, you'll get people who are invested now are going to do very, very well. I mean, we go back to Ongombo, if you look at it, I mean, the general idea is you'll blast the rock out, you'll crush it, you'll sort it with XRT sorting. Steiner have said that's possible. And then it'll just get transported to a plant, you know, elsewhere, assuming, you know, the asset doesn't just get sold at some point.
Right, you know, but it's Martin talked about 29, 30 million tonnes. But we reckon when we drilled that east shoot, you know, and then when drilling was done, nobody cared about 0.2, 0.4 gold. But, you know, in this day and age, when you've got 0.4 gold and gold is something like $70 a gram, you know, what is that? That's about $30. That's $30 rock. It pays all of your costs.
Indeed. And then on top of that, I mean, the technology in mining, when you started out, you know, compared to today, getting that gold out, getting those side products out, it's becoming cheaper and a lot easier than maybe it would have been in the past.
Well, and the beauty is, of course, you don't need to, because the Chinese, I mean, if you said, I've got a copper gold concentrate 10, 15 years ago, that bothered me. If you say you've got a copper gold concentrate, they rub their hands in glee now.
Yeah, because they're both the metals that you want.
They first gram away, and then they pay you 94% of the balance. Payability is very good, and it worries them not. So yes, things have changed. So, you know, I'm pretty confident we can take Ongombo up in the region of 50 million tons. And I'm more confident that the gold will, in actual fact, take us up to about 1.5%. So that's a nice project by anybody's standards. So 10 to 12,000 tons of copper equivalent per year, nice target for the company. And of course, what the market has recognized, this project has got a mining license.
Yeah.
And 95% through to its environmental permit. So it's literally ready for the off.
This is a technical thing that you may not even realize because you're so close to it, but the mineral resource estimate, there is a substantial inferred underground estimate, but there's also an indicated mineral resource, which is very high certainty, 5.7 million tons, 1.1% copper equivalent. Indicated mineral resource, in Namibia for copper, that's something that you just don't see very often before it gets snapped up. So it's going to be at some point, you would assume. And it's just a question of how long that takes, because you're in these conversations with various partners. People are interested. Maybe you could give a timeline, or you're not sure yet?
Oh, your interesting words there were that it's ready.
Is it not just ready? It feels ready to me.
The thing is that the size is not beyond the capability of our level of company. Basically, if you're looking at 300,000 tons of contained copper a year, that's a challenge. But, at our level, we can actually develop these projects and be significant cash flow companies with good exploration potential. The fact that most of our projects supportable by a junior and yet major company potential, that's the beauty of the table.
Yeah, right.
We can develop something. We're not, hopefully when we get them going, placings aren't every 5 minutes. The fundamentals have been defined, the strike distance. You don't need to drill your life away over a year, 2 or 3 years. We'll put a ring around this. You quite rightly said you've got a good level of indicated. But, I sold Kalambila to First Quantum for $265 million. Was not an indicated resource there. There was basically an outlined resource which managed to, which qualified as inferred, but certainly not indicated. Now, just go back to our previous conversation. It's going to be a race, I mean, new business divisions now, these mining companies haven't got, 25 geologists in house. They've got basically 3 or 4 spreadsheet guys, the new business division, together with a couple of geologists to do site visits.
Mm.
Frankly, when the need comes, it's arrived, the need has arrived. It's going to be a competition between the top companies. Who is going to jump first? I'm saying now that, when we sold Kalambila, nobody was interested. Nobody was interested. When First Quantum made an offer, everybody was interested.
Of course they were.
As a group, saying, I wonder what's happening here, what's happening there. We're on the radar screens of every single major mining company, as are other juniors on the AIM market, on the Australian market, and on the Canadian market. And anybody who's got an advanced project, which basically has been well-studied, well-drilled, has got the ability to be upgraded and made larger, is on the books of the majors, and they probably know as much about that project as management do.
Well, I mean, you mentioned the sale to First Quantum back in 2009 or whenever it was. I mean, the Central African Copper Belt, First Quantum has an option, is it not, over those assets, and that's a really promising, interesting potential there. So, I'll just run through it really quickly. Initial 18-month option period, they've got the right but not the obligation to spend $500,000 on each of 1 to 4 licenses. And it appears to me that you've got, a ready-made buyer for those. What would you say? The relationship with First Quantum must be very close, given how many years you guys have worked together.
Yeah, well, there's a bit of mutual respect as across the board. And I don't know if you know, if it's well known, that I actually found the first money for First Quantum. I had colleagues in Vancouver who had a shell called First Quantum.
I didn't know that at all. No.
Who died last year, came along with this idea to form a company. I found the shell First Quantum and found its first $2 million. I don't think that's well known. And so, yes, we're close. We've known them years. We've known them absolutely years. But, people in academia have talked about Congo-style mineralization going into Zambia. Our venture with First Quantum has not made that a concept. We have actually proved that the Kamoa, the Western Foreland, the Thrustan Fold Belt goes through into northwest Zambia. And then, of course, you will notice that I've staked out huge tracts of ground in Angola. So yes, it goes all the way through in a southwesterly direction through into Angola. And you quite rightly said that we've got quite a number of licenses in that area. So what did we achieve with First Quantum? Proof of concept. It's all there. We've discovered, not discovered, we've identified the petty conglomerate. the grand conglomerate, all of the various folding, what happens. So now we've got the precursors to mineralization. First quantum are moving the machines back, the rain stopped. And I'm rather that, you know, that we will be the first one in the region in this joint venture to, in actual fact, go through Kamoa or Kolwezi style mineralization. You know what that is, don't you? That's 5% copper.
And yeah, that's world class. Yeah.
Has some cobalt as well. So proof of concept, you can put it over. I mean, you know, 10 years ago, if you'd have put an announcement that you've proven what we've proven, God only knows what the company would have been. It'd have been a multiple, three or four times. I don't, in actual fact, think we got any recognition at all for that discovery. But, you know, I don't think we got any recognition whatsoever.
That's the market that you have, sadly, but obviously it's changing now, which is the good news. Metals come cycle in terms of popularity. I mean, a year or two ago, it was lithium. At the moment, it's probably uranium and gold. Copper is coming up now as the one that you want to, and helium, interestingly. You're looking at, I'm trying to think, the first earning period. First Quantum, the idea is they're going to prepare a technical report demonstrating an indicated mineral resource of at least 300,000 tons of contained copper. That's essentially the aim with this one at the moment. Do you think that's very likely to happen in terms of a time scale within the next year or two?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, these guys don't go into these projects. I mean, despite they've had a few problems about the First Quantum in Panama, but they're still committed to our project. And there's still two things could happen. That anybody else in the area who goes through mineralization in the Western Foreland or the Frozen Fold Belt, natural fact proven, yes, it is mineralized, same as it is up in the Congo. Why wouldn't it be 6 kilometers away? And will it happen? I don't think it's recognized again that when we put our news releases out, there are two targets. One target is near surface, and to some extent is traditional copper belt. And then the Kamoa style mineralization is about 600 or 700 meters deep. So to find a Kalambila, we're actually talking about 32 kilometers of strike. Now it would be cavalierish of me to say that's continuous. That would be very cavalierish.
Well, if it was continuous, that was it. Game over. We can all retire tomorrow.
That's game over times two, times ten. But so that in its own right, it shows immense potential for getting quickly. You know, it don't take forever to start an open pit mine. And this Kalambila mine we sold for $265 million isn't very far away. It's got tremendous milling capacity and it's thirsty for better grade ore.
The more. So, yeah.
Without building the necessary infrastructure. So just park that one. You'd be happy enough with that target. But of course, we've got much more than that, haven't we? We've got this great Western Foreland and the Thrust and Fold Belt. If I told you, you know, and it's checkable on the internet, I think one has to go back 3 or 4 years. BHP offered $1 billion for 35% of the Western Foreland to Ivanhoe, and it was turned down.
I did not know that.
Oh, well, yeah. Go back.
I'll have to Google it. That's something to research. Yeah.
That's right. And so we've got a great big chunk of ground, several situations in that chunk of ground, which is as big as that was turned down. And the area that Ivanhoe got down in Angola is a similar area, and we're wedged in between. You couldn't be in a better position if you tried. I mean, you know, this didn't happen last week or the week before. This has happened over 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
We've positioned ourselves. And that's what we're paid for as explorers. That's what we're paid for as a junior company. Anybody can follow the crowd. As a junior company, a leader of a junior company, you've got to be up front. You've got to be in the trenches. You've got to be making the rules, not following the rules. We've worked really well. And I think you're right when you say that in the future, we'll be glad we put all that hard work into identification and the work that goes into acquiring these licenses.
Well, yeah, well, that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, often it's the light at the end of a tunnel, isn't it? You put all the work in, it doesn't get recognized until eventually someone does with dollars, typically US, as the name of the game. But I mean, if we move now quickly to Botswana, Martin, I've got a question for you. So previously, Sandfire Resources was exploring the Botswana licenses. This is within the Kalahari Copper Belt, and they decided not to exercise their option. Because they generally, I mean, my perception is they didn't feel that the copper they found was large enough scale for them to be interested. But you were talking, our company was talking about like a smaller operation, you know, you're talking 5 to 10,000 tons of contained copper per year. Is that realistic? Is the copper that you're finding there enough to sustain a smaller operation? Would Sandfire, you know, potentially come back at some point in the future?
I don't know whether Sandfire would come back. I mean, maybe the licenses are a bit too distant from some of their more recent discoveries. I guess if you're looking at it from the point of view of them would it make a huge difference to their, you know, the perception and share price and all the rest of it? I don't know. But certainly if we find copper there, I would hope that it be sufficient size to be of interest for us. Of course, as you say, you know, whatever it would be, 6,000-10,000 tons of copper per annum. We still need to do further work, of course. We've got a lot of data and information that we still need to sort of sift through. But the beauty of it is that because we've got other licenses, you know, in another company, it does mean that we've got the benefit of all that additional geological information that we've
got. Synergy, don't you? Obviously, that's free sharing across them.
Well, yeah, just literally projecting the geology and seeing what we come up with. We're fortunate to be working with some external advisors who've got huge amount of Botswana experience and, you know, real proper on the ground, you know, licking rocks type experience. So that makes a big difference as well. So we're sort of, you know, we're confident that what we're doing is the right thing in terms of the strategy that we've adopted.
Wonderful. Yeah, no, I don't know. I mean, the thing is that, you know, kind of wrapping up a little bit, because I know we've all got very busy days, but the licenses that you have seem incredibly prospective. The option agreement with First Quantum, and First Quantum are doing most of the work now, covering those four licenses, additional ones in Zambia. I guess the question is, where next? What's the plan for the next 6 months? Obviously, you've got Ongombo, you've got the project funding discussions, and at Botswana, potentially a little mine going down there. But what's the strategy for the next 6 months to a year, Colin?
You've summed it up again earlier, and you've got a way of doing that. I congratulate you.
I do try. Sorry.
It's pretty much the same. But of course, you've got you summed it up when I say you summed it up. When we started our activities in the 2017, 18, 19, it was a damn sight easier than it is now. Things are full of people who are realizing what potential is in Africa as opposed to in Latin America. Latin America has gone out of its way to make life difficult for its, you know, for companies who are involved there, both in operations and exploration and environmental permitting. So that's changed a lot of people's ideas to Africa, obviously, particularly Southern Africa. So pretty much the same. But, you know, we have the benefit, I guess, that some mutual respect in Zambia. We're doing the same in Namibia. And I was the manager of the nickel copper mine in Botswana for 5 years as well. So fairly well known there, the old BCL mine. And so I think that we are well positioned. And even though our activities are not the major companies, you might in actual fact be surprised that we've mounted more campaigns as a group. I think we've had 9 drilling campaigns in the last 2 years. And that's enviable for some of the big groups have not managed that. And you know, we do in a different territory. But just as an aside, how aggressive we are and how we'll really go for discovery. In our project in Australia and another company, we drilled 38,000 meters in 2 years. There's not many majors like that. So it's very much the same visible activity when we get our licenses on the back of good connections, which certainly won't put us able to compete with the massive firepower that's now coming into the country in terms of money. But, you know, you take a look at our portfolio, it is extremely strong. I'm never comfortable. I wake up every morning looking for new opportunities, trying to make the company even better than our shareholders. But if we don't get anything more, we're extremely well positioned. But I'll be very disappointed if we don't get much of the same in the same areas. That's our mission. Boil it right down. What does the market want? It wants from the existing portfolios, the market would love to see us, you know, wake it up with them. Would love to wake up to an announcement which says X has exercised its option. There's been this big discovery. The company's been approached by whoever it is to buy, or you know, a big earning. And those things are all possible. And you know what? You know what's under threat more than anything? The Standard joint venture.
Right.
Where it came in, they spent $2 million over 4 years. And then another 4 years later, they're going to spend another $4 million. You know, so that's 8 years gone by. Then if it works, they send you an invoice for your $20 million towards a big program, and you go bust. Those days are finished. They've got to put their hands in the pocket. They've got to spend money faster. The quantum has got to be bigger, and their reaction time to what they find has got to be more suitable to our junior market. Because the shareholders in the junior market now, I'm going to, you know, pay credit to our shareholders. When I first came into this business, they were very, very reliant and that were not bulletin boards, that sort of business. Today, when I read the bulletin boards, I'm reading quite a few guys paid as analysts and would perform better than some of the people who are analysts. And so we've got a junior sector shareholder activity, which I think is at a higher level than it's ever been. And the rates, so that level of knowledge also brings greater expectation. So they're not going to be in a junior mining company announces they've got an 8-year joint venture. They want results today.
Yeah.
And wherever we can, we try and do our own work and avoid joint venture. But of course, the money numbers and the requirements are such that we all do want joint ventures. But you can bet your bottom dollar we're not going to be entering joint ventures where it takes 8 years, spend $4 million.
Yeah. Well, indeed, that's the thing. It needs to be stuff that works for you, which is kind of relatively near term. I mean, you're talking about bulletin boards and people having more information. I mean, the increased activity, sometimes I wonder whether it hurts you rather than helps you. Often when you're looking at like a junior explorer, if you invest, wait 5 years, let it dig up the copper, let it find somebody who wants to buy it, and then you're fine. It tends to be the case that people who are kind of like hovering between the buy and sell button 24/7 can never really trust their own decisions. Whereas if you just had information coming out once every couple of months, maybe it made it a little bit easier back in the day. I don't know. It's probably better now, but you just have more volatility and maybe investors are less married to individual companies.
Yeah, we're very much on trading platforms now. But yeah. I think that nature of the fact that, we're a venture capital market. What amazes me again is that I would have thought, when I first got into this public company business, in the times we're in now, we would definitely have been a call option to copper. Mm. So you could have almost tracked your share price up, down, and across with the commodities that you were...
The copper price, yeah.
Exploring for. So I'm quite amazed at this mismatch. I would have thought people like companies like African Pioneer and Galileo Resources and that, companies like that would have actually been a straightforward call option and our share price would have tracked this copper price. And that is the disconnect that surprises me most of all. And it disappoints the shareholders.
Yeah.
They've got high expectations. And I think it's, whilst I don't like it, I can understand it, that if you wake up a morning and you're reading the papers and you see copper's charging away there, and yet copper companies who claim to have advanced copper exploration, the share price is battling to stay at a penny or a penny and a bit. Good Lord, what's happening here? Is my company real? And I understand their frustration, their exasperation with management that why aren't you taking the benefit of this copper price?
You've done your job. You found the copper. Now we just have to wait for the markets to, figure out the value of it, which hopefully they will soon. This interview is not about Galileo, but as you have mentioned it, there is potentially some very exciting news come out this morning. Can you say anything about that at the moment or not yet?
Maybe Martin would like to talk about that.
Martin, go on.
I mean, we're sort of following protocol here in as much as the Cadastre and the ministry has made the statement, but as yet we've not received a formal document. So we're in a position where
we have to wait. Yeah.
We have to wait until we get a formal document. But of course, it's good news.
Yeah.
And I look forward to getting that formal document and then we can move on from there. And as we've stated in some of our RNSs and things, we've got a number of interested parties. Some of whom actually on site today, funnily enough, just having a good look around.
Yeah. So that's how people are listening to the end.
I think we can be quietly confident, but it would be remiss of us to put an RNS out until
you have to be careful.
We've got a formal document in our hand, despite the fact that you can go online and find the information.
Yes, but yes, you're waiting for the document with all the I's dotted and all the T's crossed. One
absolutely. But it is exciting times.
It's
a particularly exciting place to be. Namibia is a particularly exciting place to be. And Botswana is as stable as they refer to it as the Switzerland of Africa.
Yeah.
When we're in all of the right places, we've got a huge portfolio of big and small of copper. We just welcome that change where our industry, where our part of the industry is getting the recognition it used to get.
Well, I'll finish up on this. It is amazing to me now that every single analyst, every major company, every metals trader is saying copper is going to skyrocket because of this supply gap. And now it's going to be a question of, okay, where are we going to get all this copper from? And as you say, Latin America, it's not happening. Australia, is the operating costs are very expensive. It's going to be Africa. You've positioned yourself very well. And let's hope that the market recognizes that over the next couple of years. I think it will. You're going to do very well. Okay. Yeah.
Very kind of you to say that. And if I can just, I know I've got to, we want to wrap this up, but you know what we need in London or what we need in Australia or Canada? Mm. We're ready. We need a big success.
Yes.
You know, like Alan Beeler, when we sold Qara for 265, one of our companies has got to have that big success, the big yes. discovery, which is sold on to a major. And then this venture capital market will basically get a reboot in my view.
100%. You know, I think we were... I'm not trying to graduate. It's more your time rather than mine, but I could be here all day. I'm more than happy to chat about everything. But I was talking to a friend about this the other day about how, Great Lane Gold found Javier on, for example. And I think that's the last time that there was like a massive deposit and like a huge amount of interest in the sector. So we are really overdue one. It would make sense for it to be a copper deposit in Africa. Hopefully one of yours. But yeah, this is the thing, is it feels like, what does it feel? I wouldn't allude to investing as gambling, because it is not gambling. Feels like you've put so much money into the machine, there should now be a payout of some kind. There should be a big discovery. It's going to happen. I'm praying that it's one of your companies, Colin. And I really hope that a couple of years from now, everyone's going to go, wow, look at that opportunity that we got in at the ground floor. So yeah, perfect. Anyway,
exactly. That's the way we see it too. Pretty much the same. Hammering away on those things that we can add some value to. The yeah. things which are negative, quite frankly, I just wake up to make me miserable in the morning. But once out of bed, we get on with life, and we want to be ready for when it's all up. And we're not very far away. And like you, we wish it's our company. But anybody who makes a big discovery and a big sale. We'll kick out these markets, these
general
markets.
Or everybody else, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So we'd like it to be us, but I think whoever it is, we'll kickstart the market.
Indeed. Okay.
On that note, we'll say Charles, Colin and Martin, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you very much, Bill.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.